What's the purpose of mysticism? If it is to transport us out of the mess, then Brueggemann would say that that's a transcendentalist model that's escapist. Or does Ruth's mysticism invite us to see what's really going on more clearly and to participate in it? See? I don't think Ruth is escaping. I think she's diving right in the middle of life with her mysticism. But there is a mystical thing whereby you can sit around and either do your mantra or you sing your om or do some other spacey thing and basically just trip out all day on Jesus or Gandhi or Hare Krishna or, you know, See's Candies or something. You can just float away, right?
Is it that, what do they call that, where you leave your body?
Yeah, yeah.
Type thing?
Mm-hmm. You what?
You mentally,
oh,
whatever they call it, leaves your body. Your body is sitting there on hold or whatever, and you're heading out across the plains, you know, going to California or whatever.
Yeah.
In your mind. Or,
yeah.
Well, except they say it's not in your mind, it's supposedly.
Really happening.
You're doing it.
Yes.
You know, your body's back home.
Right.
Cheaply to jail.
Right. You'll never lose your luggage.
That's the way I came out here.
You're not here. You're not here.
Jeez. I'm fine.
No wonder he never
snored. There's a special application for people who are only in spirit. All right. The meaning is beyond historical experience. Now, this transcendental thing embraces both cold logic and mysticism. See, it embraces cold logic because it says the book of Genesis is a scientific historical document about the creation of the world, and we know it's true. See? It's very logical. It's very rational. And it's got to defend this rational theory. And as it defends this rational theory of the inspiration of the scriptures, it's trying to be transcendental. Saying that there's a value system up here, and our theory supports this value system that cuts through history.
But our experience has nothing to do with the
truth. Right.
Nothing. To do
right.
With the truth.
That's right. The truth is a.
Life is a big GRE for heaven.
Uh huh. A who?
GRE, graduate record exam.
Ah.
Exam that Bay Tech's going to
yes,
go to school.
Sure.
Yeah, I never took one of those.
Hey, you're not going to heaven.
The transcendental model. Is contrary to incarnational theology. That is, it's contrary to a theology that says Jesus became a person. That religion is for good feelings. Get buzzed. Okay? I abdicate my responsibility in the transcendentalist model. I abdicate. I mean, sure, there's one account, a creation account in Genesis 1, and there's another one in Genesis chapter 2, and they don't agree. Well, it's okay. I mean, I just switch my head off.
Truth.
Huh?
They are both.
Thank you. That's right. You just click your mind and you say, well, I don't have to deal with that. It's inconsistent, but I don't care because I'm on a transcendental airplane floating right over the top of these mountains and I don't have to deal with history. I don't have to deal with facts. I don't have to deal with anything. I'm just floating along.
It's a cop-up.
Talk about having a view of the world that is different from the world's view of itself. So in a sense, we get into that too. I mean, okay, you say that the only way to have power is to get elected to public office, and we say that power is in the cross. Now that's
transcendent. That's right.
Kind of sailing right across the top too.
Brueggemann would have some hard questions to ask of John Howard Yoder.
Can we get them together once?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Wouldn't that be fun? Have sort of a round robin, chairs in a circle in the Village Center, and let them go at it.
What denomination is he with, Brueggemann?
He's out of the Reformed tradition. Church of Christ or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Reformed. Now, compared to the transcendental model, move it on over. Life is understood in the midst of historical hurts and historical amazements, which judge us, heal us, and call us to repentance. We are in history with a partner. Okay. Now, he asks us to have some idea where we're coming from, either transcendentalist, existentialist, or modern industrial. Compare that to the covenantal historical model over here. Now what he wants to do, he wants to expand covenantal historical, and he does it four ways. Okay, he's going to expand it. Let me ask this question. Then I'll tell a story. When Kay and I got married, I came from a Norwegian, northern Minnesota, Lutheran, Haugi, pietistic, thou shalt not drink, dance, or smoke, or have any fun tradition. Okay? Then what happened was that Kay had to come to my tradition, I had to go to hers, because her tradition was Detroit, Michigan, Methodist church, no smoking, no drinking, but dancing's okay. Then I couldn't understand that at all. I mean, I could understand, yes, drinking's bad, smoking's bad, but isn't dancing bad too? No, dancing's good. Well, wait a second. How could dancing be good if you see it, seeing that all? Well, okay. She was a Methodist and I was a Lutheran, so the other tradition in her family was Southern Indiana, some hillbillies there, a farm family in Michigan, the big clan, the Davis clan. My side of the family was farm, but South Dakota farm. A little difference there, but some similarities. When a person marries, what you do is the first thing that happens is you, when you're courting, is you go have Thanksgiving dinner at the other, yes? At the other person's house. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now what happens then? So I went to Indiana and all the relatives were there and I was this person from the far country coming to have Thanksgiving dinner in this alien land. Now what they were doing, two things were happening. A, I was evaluating them, and B, they were evaluating me. Okay. Now, if for this covenant to happen, for this marriage to occur, I will need to join their tradition. And they will need to appreciate, that is more than Kay and her folks, it's not just Kay, her mom and dad and her sisters and everybody, they've got to understand my tradition. It's a very big transaction between families. All of that is an analogy of, is a parable of what Brueggemann is trying to say about one of the dimensions of this covenantal historical perspective. And he calls it concrete, the concrete. I ask the question, are you emotionally able to move into another person's family? In other words, I had to join Kay's tradition. She had to join mine. The Bible invites us to join its tradition, its history. We are not at the same place as the Bible, probably. We come out of a different culture. American, growth culture, lots of things. Are you able emotionally, like in a marriage, to move yourself from here to there, to join that new concrete tradition? Sunday school is getting you ready for a wedding. Okay? That's what Sunday school is all about. Sunday school gets you ready to leave one tradition behind and to join the Bible tradition, to join the Bible family. Want to respond to any of this?
Or in a Lutheran sense, it's to put you in that Bible tradition.
It's to put you in that Bible, yes. Right. Good Sunday school does that. Good Bible teaching, good sermons, good worship, good stuff, good youth groups do that. Bad youth groups do one of two things. Either they make you a robot Lutheran, mimicking and parroting everything that is Lutheran, or they make you a good American. Follow that? So I for myself, let me say that I think I've been made a better Lutheran sometimes than I have been made a Christian. That I'm more anxious to defend Lutheranism than I am Christianity. And I think one of the gifts that Holden has been to me has been a little perspective on Lutheranism is not God's gift to creation. Okay? It's not the end and the be all and end all of things. I'm asking a specific question. Emotionally, what is involved? Let's just talk about marriage. Are you emotionally capable of joining another tradition that is really quite foreign from your own? I mean, what are the dynamics involved in that whole thing?
None of us have. You're going pretty far afield.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's not
Paul, well, Paul. That, yeah, you, sorry about that.
Well, but there's none of it. You certainly understand the question, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know that there's any answer. Let me just suggest that what Brueggemann, I think Brueggemann is trying to do is to say, you think it's tough getting married? You think moving from your, you know, let's say you marry a Jew from Brooklyn. That's going to be lots of fun, right? You're going to have a real good time understanding what's going on in Brooklyn, New York, and your family's going to have a lot of fun, and the people in Brooklyn are going to think you're weird. Yes? Rosemald. Who Rosemald's in Brooklyn? Nobody understands you. Lila's going to be a tourist in Brooklyn. All of her life if she marries somebody like that. So what happens here in the Bible tradition is we leave, Brueggemann says there is a concrete transfer. You leave one culture, you join another. What I wrote here is this. It is concrete, this model. A particular people have been chosen who live in a concrete history. They are to do God's work and to trust God's promises. They have an identity and they have a burden. Identity and burden. Those are two big words for Brueggemann. Identity is to say, I am Jewish. Okay? Identity is to say, the Exodus story is my story. Identity. Jesus, I know who Jesus is. That's my identity. Identity. I know why Martin Luther King worked in Atlanta, Georgia. I understand it. I identify with him. Okay? I get it? Okay, and it's a history that's 6,000 years. But all through this history, you identify with this people. You join their story. Number two, that this is a precise historical memory, not a vague, fuzzy thing. Very precise, not fooling the bear. Specific history. It is a memory of, a historical memory of liberation, empowerment, and caring suffering, and the surprise of new life. This memory is our past, but it shapes our present. Later on, we're going to get into more of what the nature of this precise historical memory is. This is not easy, is it? These are just big words, yeah? No? Does it make sense? Okay. Brueggemann, I'm just going to say it because it's right at the top of my head right now. He says, the precise historical memory is that God loves poor people. That's that is as big a truth as there is in the Bible. God's with the poor. And he said, now, here you and I sit in America, and we got a real big problem on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like Lila marrying a Jew in Brooklyn. That's a big jump. It's a big, big jump from Moorhead, Minnesota to Brooklyn, New York. It's a big jump, Brueggemann says, from American culture, rich, affluent American culture, to the Bible perspective, which says the poor are the winners and the rich are put down. Yeah. Who wants it? Who? We are not interested in this, thank you very much. It is a big jump. Brueggemann keeps going after it. He says there is no way to escape from that thrust. That's what the Bible is all about. Blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor. He goes right to the Sermon on the Mount and says, that's the crux. He does the same thing Bonhoeffer does. He says, that's the center right there. And that's the center because it's all through the Old Testament. It starts in Genesis, and there's hardly a page goes by that doesn't have the same thing. Bang, bang, bang. God's active in history where? Namibia, El Salvador. That's the point. And we're not there. We're in a whole different place, and it's not fun to read it anymore. It's not fun to read it here. Third thing about this model, the future is expected, but it's also present. It's a double thing. The future is not a blissful blur in heaven.
Someday I'll go to heaven.
It's not just a blissful blur, but it is expecting God's future, which judges us now, like El Salvador, judges us right now. We are offended by that judgment, but the future is with the poor and the powerless. God has and will work through them. Always has, always will. That's the Bible message. I mean, the big question is, what in the world does a church, how does an affluent church say these sort of things? I mean, how does it do it? Huh? I don't know either. How do clergy who have a pension fund in Minneapolis and a retirement plan, I just got a letter the other day that told me how much a month I'm going to get when I retire. Every year I get the same letter. It's just great. You got it, Del. Sure.
Went down.
Right.
Great. It's
come to hold the village.
Yes, it goes down. Right.
Every month, it's really wonderful. We get a nice form letter, and it says, when you retire, you'll get this much Social Security, this much pension from the ALC, get total autos this much a year. Mine right now is $900 a month. That's what I'll get if I retire.
Holy cow.
Well, that's not much, my friend.
That's a lot. When you retire, you don't have a whole family.
You'll be old then.
Well,
by the time
okay, it's not much, but it is.
By the time we retire, compared to what?
Compared to what?
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, Papa Del.
Rich Kamer had a good view on that, where he spends his time with art and churches and worship and that. But he will only work at a church, I understand, where they give the same for missions that they do to keep the church going. You know, anything they do to keep the worship life going is balanced by an equal amount for benevolences, missions, outreach. That's a good standard, isn't it? A good boundary.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this idea of, when you were talking about that, affluence and the level of expectation or need, and it's very clear to me that I could live with little, but I need other people doing that too, because I can't do that by myself. And I think that as we become more affluent, and if you look at the suburbs, affluence seems to breed isolation.
Yes.
So that you become richer and you surround yourself with things, and you're not with people, you're with your things.
Mm.
So I can forego a lot of the stuff, but I can't do it by myself.
If you're going to be alone, you might as well have some things to be with.
No, I think if you're going to give your fix up, you need people. I mean, what I'm saying is the real essence is that you need... The whole idea of community has not hit me until I've come here.
You do got to know as well. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to find people that can be poor with you.
No, but I mean in community.
I guess there we go with our definition of poor. You know.
Chosen poor
is different from just plain old poor.
But I still think though that I mean we can talk we are one of the very few minority, tiny, tiny minority people who can even talk about chosen poverty.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean there are so many people out there that are poor that didn't have any choice in it, but they're the people that God is on their side. I'm just convinced.
This really goes right over my head, but expecting God's future which judges us.
Mm-hmm.
You lost me there. We are judged by what is going to happen.
Yep. Got it. Didn't go over your head at all.
No, I mean, that was not a statement. That was a question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just rephrased the sentence, and I'm going, I don't understand.
All, Brueggemann says, all through history, for 6,000 years, every time, the intervention, the Bible's perspective is that every time there's an intervention, that God intervenes in history, he always joins the poor side, the poor people side. Every time that happens, when God joins the poor people side, that is, in fact, a judgment against the rich. And that is a pattern that is all the time, over and over and over and over. God intervenes, always with the poor, always against the rich. God judges in history. Fourth thing he says about the historical covenantal model is that this is our vocation. Our vocation is to be more than survivors in this world. Our vocation is to be more than copers, you know, sort of mellow with a psychiatrist or so, but to be obediently suffering for the sake of the world, as did Jesus. Our vocation is the cross, the shape of our lives. Brueggemann and Yoder do not sit on the same faculty together. They're both Bible scholars, and this book was not selected because it's a Yoder look-alike. Okay? It was selected just because it stands on its own. But the themes, I think, are so consistent and common. Now, some summary statements. The Bible does not perceive reality the way we usually do. It calls us to serious revamping of the way that we think, the way we speak, the way we see, with the way we live. It draws, not fraws, it draws us into another history, which is at odds with the public history most of us embrace. The Bible gives us an alternative vision of what it is to be human. Human in history and human in covenant. Covenantal history.
In that one, it draws us into another history which is at odds with the public history most of us embrace. Is that kind of... Our thoughts of history, like progress, is living more comfortably. Getting more for yourself.
Yes, yeah. Modern industrial scientific model, that one you just quoted, yes.
Okay.
On the least sophisticated level, what Brueggemann is doing is saying, here, let me introduce you to this friend. The friend's name is Bible. The friend has this personality, these perspectives, this background, these habits, lives in this kind of house. Get to know this friend. Okay, here's your period. This is a sort of a cocktail party, and Brueggemann's introducing us to La Bible. Okay? All right, that's what's going on here. Every month, it's really wonderful. We get a nice, warm letter, and it says, when you retire, you'll get this much Social Security, this much pension from the LC, you get total autos this much a year. Mine right now is $900 a month. That's what I'll get if I retire.
Holy cow.
Well, that's not much, my friend.
That's a lot.
You think?
When you're retired, you don't have a whole family.
You'll be old then.
Wow.
By the time
okay, it's not much, but it is.
By the time he retires, compared to what?
Compared to what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Rich Kamer had a good view on that, where he spends his time with art and churches and worship and that. But he will only work at a church, I understand, where they give the same for missions that they do to keep the church going. You know, anything they do to keep the worship life going is balanced by an equal amount for benevolences, missions, outreach. That's a good standard, isn't it? A good boundary.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this idea of, when we were talking about that affluence and the level of expectation or need, and it's very clear to me that I could live with little, but I need other people doing that too, because I can't do that by myself. And I think that as we become more affluent, and if you look at the suburbs, affluence seems to breed isolation, so that you become richer and you surround yourself with things, and you're not with people, you're with your things.
Mm.
So I can forego a lot of the stuff, but I can't do it by myself.
If you're going to be alone, you might as well have some things to be with.
No, I think if you're going to give your fix up, you need people. I mean, what I'm saying is the real essence is that you need... The whole idea of community has not hit me until I've come here.
People do go to the hospital, so it's not hard to find people that can be poor with you.
No, but I mean in community.
I guess there we go with our definition of poor. You know.
Chosen poor
is different from just plain old poor.
But I still think, though, that, I mean, we can talk, we are one of the very few minority, tiny, tiny minority people who can even talk about chosen poverty.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many people out there that are poor that didn't have any choice in it, but they're the people that God is on their side. I'm just convinced. Chosen poverty to the contrary.
This really goes right over my head. But expecting God's future, which judges us.
Mm-hmm.
You lost me there. We are judged by what is going to happen.
Yep. Got it. Didn't go over your head at all.
No, I mean, that was not a statement. That was a question. I mean, I just rephrased the sentence, and I'm going, I don't.
All Brueggemann says, all through history, for 6,000 years, every time the intervention, the Bible's perspective is that every time there's an intervention, that God intervenes in history, he always joins the poor side, the poor people side. Every time that happens, when God joins the poor people side, that is in fact a judgment against the rich. And that is a pattern that is all the time, over and over and over and over. God intervenes, always with the poor, always against the rich. God judges in history. Fourth thing he says about the historical covenantal model is that this is our vocation. Our vocation is to be more than survivors in this world. Our vocation is to be more than copers, and we'll sort of mellow with a psychiatrist or so. But to be obediently suffering for the sake of the world, as did Jesus. Our vocation is the cross, the shape of our lives. Brueggemann and Yoder do not sit on the same faculty together. Okay. They're both Bible scholars, and this book was not selected because it's a Yoder lookalike. Okay. It was selected just because it stands on its own. But the themes, I think, are so consistent and common. Now, some summary statements. The Bible does not perceive reality the way we usually do. It calls us to serious revamping of the way that we think, the way we speak, the way we see, with the way we live. It draws, not fraws, it draws us into another history, which is at odds with the public history most of us embrace. The Bible gives us an alternative vision of what it is to be human. Human in history and human in covenant. Covenantal history.
In that one, it draws us into another history which is at odds with the public history most of us embraces. That kind of our thoughts of history, like progress, is living more comfortably.
Yeah.
Getting more for yourself.
Yes, yeah. Modern industrial scientific model, that one you just quoted, yes.
Okay.
On the least sophisticated level, what Brueggemann is doing is saying, here, let me introduce you to this friend. The friend's name is Bible. The friend has this personality, these perspectives, this background, these habits, lives in this kind of house. Get to know this friend. Okay, here's your period. This is a sort of a cocktail party, and Brueggemann's introducing us to La Bible. Okay? Right? That's what's going on here.